from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in this week for Michael Krasny. Today marks the 10th year of operation for the Guantanamo Bay prison camp in Cuba. It was opened by President Bush after the 9/11 attacks, and today there are still some 170 inmates there, with only a small fraction awaiting trial. So what's become of President Obama's pledge to close Guantanamo? The administration says it remains committed to shutting it down, but a law signed by the president last month makes it much tougher to release any prisoners. We'll look back at Guantanamo Bay and into the future, and we'll get started with Forum right after this. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Human rights groups are planning protests around the world today, marking the 10th anniversary of the opening of the Guantanamo Bay prison camp in Cuba. The Bush administration created the prison to house what were described as dangerous al-Qaeda terrorists or sympathizers. But allegations of torture and mistreatment of inmates led to international condemnation over the years. President Obama's promise to close the prison is very much on the back burner, a victim of politics, legal challenges, and critics say a lack of political will. This hour, an update on Guantanamo and what the future may hold for the 171 inmates still detained there. Joining us here in the studio is Rini Chakraborty. She's West Coast Regional Director with Amnesty International. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Also joining us by phone is Captain Glenn Salmacy. He is chairman of the Department of Humanities and a professor of law at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy. He's also author of The National Security Court System. Captain Salmacy, good to have you as well.
Good morning, Scott.
And also joining us by phone, J.D. Gordon, former Defense Department spokesman under both Secretary Rumsfeld and Secretary Robert Gates from 2005 to 2009, and most recently a foreign policy advisor for presidential candidate Herman Cain. Good morning to you as well.
Hello, Scott.
Well, I want to begin by asking each of you, and I'll start with you, Rini, the significance of this anniversary. What's important about it? Why should we be remembering it and talking about it today?
Well, Guantanamo has been open for 10 long years, and in our opinion, it's really been 10 years too long. It has unfortunately become a source of embarrassment for the country in many ways and an internationally recognized symbol of torture, illegal detentions, and other human rights abuses and violations committed by the U.S. government in the name of fighting terrorism. It has also, unfortunately, become a decade-long stain on those core principles and values we cherish most as Americans. So today, scores of activists around the world are holding demonstrations in Stockholm, in Spain, in Washington, D.C., in San Francisco, really all over the world, to call on Congress and the president to close down Guantanamo and ensure that all the detainees receive are properly charged and receive a fair trial or otherwise to release them immediately.
J.D. Gordon, let me go to you. Do you agree? I suspect not, that it's a stain on the U.S. Core principles of the country.
Well, I think what happened was Guantanamo did a good job in protecting the country from further 9/11s, and I think the embarrassment was in large part created by the left, and that is a lot of things were said about Guantanamo that had absolutely no bearing on reality. For instance, no detainees were waterboarded at Guantanamo, like the left says. Only about 1% of the detainees were ever even abused, according to our exhaustive internal investigations. And so I think that the embarrassment for Guantanamo was really caused by the left, sadly.
Although it was certainly widely criticized by others, including John McCain.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, at the very outset, Secretary Rumsfeld, when he created Guantanamo, he said it was the least worst option we had to deal with holding al-Qaeda and Taliban-linked militants. So from the get-go, we realized that it was going to be a difficult place to have them, and the war on terror was difficult in general.
Were mistakes made, at the beginning at least?
Yeah, absolutely. There were definitely mistakes made with Guantanamo. The first and foremost mistake was that there just wasn't enough transparency, especially when people understood that some of the things that the Bush administration said about WMD programs in Iraq didn't ended up passing muster, people were very critical about Guantanamo at that point. The pendulum swung because people thought, well, if the Bush administration was wrong about the WMD programs in Iraq, which the whole world thought Iraq had, then maybe they're wrong about some of the detainees, too. And the second major mistake was that about 5% of the detainees at Guantanamo should have never been sent there. There was a very rushed screening process in Afghanistan before they were sent. The detainees that were captured in Afghanistan and Pakistan. So about 5% of the detainees should have never been there, and they proved very, very difficult, if not impossible, to repatriate. And those few dozen people were held up by their attorneys to say, see, look, there are a bunch of innocent goat herders at Guantanamo, and there were a few people that shouldn't have been there, like I said, a few dozen. But by and large, the great majority of detainees were very dangerous, and they should have been there.
Captain Solmasi, let me go to you. What is the legal status of the 171 inmates there now, and how has it changed over the years?
Well, Scott, I think first it is a glaring reminder. It has been 10 years, and what I think it really symbolizes at this point that we're still mired in the decade-old debates of whether this is really a law enforcement action requiring use of our civilian courts and civilian procedures and constitutional rights, or whether it's a war we're fighting against al-Qaeda, a struggle against al-Qaeda, the armed conflict against al-Qaeda, thus requiring a law of war regime where prisoner of war status and the Geneva Conventions would apply. What we have really is this dynamic. We're still trapped in these two distinct paradigms that haven't actually, we haven't evolved or morphed our legal systems to adapt to the new threat of the 21st century. And you hear both Reaney and JD alluding to them, but we're still trapped in these two decade-old debates. We need to morph, adapt, and become a new, have, create a new legal system that best meets the challenges for not just Guantanamo Bay, but also for the prison camp in Bagram, Afghanistan, which you're hearing more and more criticism from the international community about as well.
And the legal status of the men who are there?
What we have right now is they're in limbo. And what you have is right now the president has said there'll be three options. One is we will take some, and we were trying to, or the president was trying to bring some to civilian courts to prosecute. Some will be tried by military commission still, which, you know, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who's gone back and forth now in terms of where he'll be tried, will be before a military commission. And the last group will be those that will be held indefinitely. And this is what Reaney's alluding to, where people are terribly uncomfortable because think of no trial, no courtroom, no lawyer, no charge, but kept for the duration of the hostility, which in this case would be a lifetime sentence
without any trial. And those are people, Reaney, who the FBI, the CIA, and others have deemed not to be a risk or...
That's
what?
Right. And you have the case of about, 48 detainees, for example, who have been basically cleared. But the problem is that the president has decided to detain them indefinitely. In some cases, you also have Yemeni detainees who, again, have been cleared. But again, due to security issues in Yemen, we've decided to hold them indefinitely. And this is astonishing. I mean, not only as Solmasi alluded to earlier, I mean, it's absolutely astonishing that Guantanamo has remained open for 10 years. But really, we're looking at the fact that for the first time really in American history, we're enshrining the principle of indefinite detention.
And what about the charge that we heard from J.D. Gordon that the left has misrepresented what happened there?
Well, there are well-documented cases, statistics, et cetera, that show that there was, in fact, torture, ill treatment, cruel treatment, not only in Bagram and other detention facilities controlled by the U.S., but also at Guantanamo. Just this past weekend, there were two very compelling essays written by former detainees, one of whom was held in Guantanamo for 7.5 years and documents the type of treatment he was subjected to. And the fact that he was torn apart from his family and ultimately released, again, without any charges filed against him and ultimately cleared of any wrongdoing. The other thing I would also like to mention, which your previous speaker mentioned, is that somehow the number of detainees that were held at Guantanamo, he mentioned this 5% statistic, who never should have been held there. I think we really need to press hard and ask what that statistic is based on. The fact is over 700 men were detained at Guantanamo, again, with no charges, no trial, and hundreds were released, in some cases after years of languishing in detention. For no reason.
J.D. Gordon, what about that point, that it seems like that number would be a lot higher than 5% if those men were subsequently released?
No, absolutely. The number 5% came from the Combatant Status Review Tribunals, which were instituted as a result of a Supreme Court decision. And basically, we took a look at the detainees who were there, did a Combatant Status Review Tribunal, and about 5% of them were determined to be no longer enemy combatants. That was a result of Rasul v. Bush in 2004. And so the 5% figure is one that we've been able to come up with to show that, yeah, there were certain detainees that shouldn't have been there, several dozen out of about 780 that were there. So we're very confident with that figure, and the great majority of detainees were actually quite dangerous. In fact, the Defense Intelligence Agency has come up with a figure as recently as last year that suggests that 25% of the detainees who have been released have gone back to terrorism, and that's about 150 detainees. So that's very dangerous. This includes a former suicide bomber in Iraq who killed 13 people. This includes former leadership figures from al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. It also includes former senior Taliban operatives who are operating again in Afghanistan.
Captain Solmasi, that does underscore the dilemma that the now Obama administration faces, doesn't it? Although they may not have enough evidence to charge some of these people, there may not be any evidence, but the fact that some who have been released have rejoined some of the terrorist organizations, that presents a problem, doesn't it?
There's no question. The recidivism rate at 25 to 30%, I've heard as high, JD, as 30%, is something to be conscious of, and the administration has been conscious of trying to do that, and both administrations have been, because what we're dealing with is, on a large scale, an international scale, the delicate balance between the promotion of human rights and promoting the national security of the United States, and it's difficult in the 21st century. What we're dealing with is this tremendous, as I said, these paradigms, and we're not really recognizing still. We've adapted ourselves, Scott, strategically to the new threats. We've created the Department of Homeland Security, the Director of National Intelligence. We've had these tremendous efforts strategically. Tactically, we created the new COIN manual, and we have new ways to surge and how to fight these type of fighters overseas, which is different from our traditional ways. Well, we haven't adapted ourselves, which we really need to, is legally. And so we're trapped in this quagmire, and we can't get ourselves out of it.
We're talking this hour about the 10th anniversary today of the opening of the Guantanamo Bay prison camp in Cuba. Our guests are Captain Glenn Solmasi. He's author of The National Security Court System, A Natural Evolution of Justice in an Age of Terror. Also with us, Rini Chakraborty. She's West Coast Regional Director for Amnesty International. And J.D. Gordon, former Defense Department spokesman under both Secretaries Donald Rumsfeld and Robert Gates from 2005 to 2009. In terms of the legal status, Rini Chakraborty, is it not fair to say that the men who are held there now have more legal rights, in part as a result of rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court, and more access to legal advice, and also there have been more there's more openness at the camp, more transparency than there was 5 or certainly 10 years ago?
I think the answer to that is yes and no. I mean, there have been certain nominal changes made over the last couple of years, but what you also see is essentially that a lot of the rights that were gained, for example, through Supreme Court decisions around habeas, et cetera, again, those core standards and principles that are enshrined in American values and laws, a lot of those, again, have eroded over the last several years. You know, we're basically looking at a separate and inherently unequal system of justice for Guantanamo detainees that flies in the face of not only the type of standards and that we as Americans hold dear, but also flies in the face of international norms for what constitutes fair trials.
And Glenn Solmasi, these men who are about to or will go under trial in the coming months, how confident are you that they'll get a fair trial?
I think there's no question. One of the items that we do find is the military justice system is incredibly fair. And one of the items that you do see with the military commissions, even with in the Hamdan case, he only had time served plus 6 months, who was the right-hand man. If you remember, Hamdan was the right-hand man, the driver, the special assistant, if you will, to Osama bin Laden, who was found with a bunch of missiles and weaponry inside of his trunk of his car when he was pulled over. I think it's inherently fair. And what you have is a criticism sometimes that I think is unwarranted against the military. The military are carrying out the duties and responsibilities that are assigned to them, and they do a incredibly noble job. And one of the items that Rini raised earlier that we have to be careful of, to say there's all sorts of abuse and torture, I think we have to look at what those men and women, the noble men and women who are down at Guantanamo or serving our country overseas, are doing for our country every day. And for the most part, with some very glaring exceptions, that men and women are noble in the system of justice that's in place for the military commissions now in its third iteration of the military commissions process.
And you call that system incredibly fair. Does that mean that some of these men could be found not guilty and released?
No question. I think that you have to go in as a presumption of innocence. And when you look at our military commission and our military officers, there's certainly that case. We know, I think, from just in the reading of the newspapers, as well as in our general knowledge, that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed will have a very difficult task ahead to prove his innocence, especially when many of them will likely plead guilty for a variety of reasons. But I think he'd certainly have a fairer trial before a military commission than he would before a jury of his peers in lower Manhattan.
Rini Chakraborty, what do you think of that?
Yeah, you have to ask the question, why was that system set up in the first place? You know, for organizations like Amnesty and many, many, many Americans, we have full faith and confidence in the American justice system, because at the end of the day, that's a system that has successfully tried and convicted terrorists. So the real question is, why do we need this separate and unequal system of justice for Guantanamo detainees? And our answer to that question is, we don't, because we have a system of justice in this country that is fully capable of successfully trying and convicting terrorists.
And J.D. Gordon, what about that point? Because when you look at the suspected terrorists who have gone through the criminal justice system and compare them with others who've gone through a military tribunal, the kind of justice, the outcome is at the very least the same or similar, isn't it?
No, not at all. I've written several columns about this, actually. One good example about the American justice system is O.J. Simpson. I think.
Well, but I'm talking about terror suspects.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm relating that to O.J. Simpson, because if we trust the American justice system, do we actually think that O.J. Simpson didn't do anything for his first trial? So I related that to Ahmed Gailani, because Ahmed Gailani was accused of being one of the key plotters to blow up the East African embassies. He was whisked out of Guantanamo last year by the actually it was 2010 now, by the Obama administration. He went to face a trial in New York, and he was almost acquitted. He was found not guilty of 184 out of 185 counts, because of jury peculiarities. One of the jurors just didn't want to convict him. She felt sorry for him. So he almost got off with killing so many people in East Africa at our embassy in Dar es Salaam. So if you trust that jury system, I think that's a very flawed way to go about it if you're talking about trying to protect Americans from terrorists, really, that want to destroy this country.
Captain Salmasi, what do you think of that? Does that point, I mean, he is now behind bars and serving a long sentence, I believe. Does that point to the potential weakness in our criminal justice system with regard to these kinds of suspects?
No question. I think what you're hearing is both sides, Scott, where there's weaknesses in both. When I was saying the military justice system is fair, certainly our criminal justice system is fair, but is it the right venue for the type of suspect we're dealing with? And what you hear really is Rini saying it has to be terrorism. You can hear her treating it like a crime, a criminal activity. It should be continued to be treated that fashion. JD is saying, well, it's more like a war, so we should be treating it. This is the traditional law of war. These things we're saying we created, there's a misnomer out there, a miscommunication, the people's perception that the military commissions didn't start under the Bush administration. They started under General Washington, and they were used by Andrew Jackson and used by President Lincoln and used by FDR. And so what they did, what they really were doing when we're hearing this, what the problem has become 10 years later, we're trying to jam a square peg in a round hole, trying to jam these people into the civilian justice system where you have a Siddiqui or a Boumediene or a Moussaoui or Gailani, that it's not working right. And you see in the military justice system it not working because the perception from people is, when perceptions matter and the military justice system might be fair, but you see military officers holding a trial with what appears to be a civilian in civilian attire being tried before them. And that perception sends the wrong signal to the world. Neither one is fitting neatly.
Rini, there have been, I think, 7 deaths of inmates at Guantanamo in the past 10 years. What do we know about those?
We don't know that much. I actually think the number is about 8. 6 of those were reported as suicides. 2 were due to natural causes. I think the problem with Guantanamo and just generally with this entire debate is that we really don't have all the information. When a previous speaker was talking about, well,
what information would you like to have that you don't have?
So, for example, a previous speaker mentioned that there have been all sorts of allegations of torture, ill treatment, et cetera. They're not just allegations. In a number of cases, they're well documented. But actually, the type of quote-unquote interrogation techniques that were used are still considered highly classified. And, you know, getting back to this issue around whether or not detainees should be tried in federal courts and whether or not they're actually getting a quote-unquote fair trial at the military commissions, the fact is they're not. And again, I find it astonishing that, you know, one of the speakers so far has expressed really serious doubts about the jury system in this country. I mean, I think many of us have a great deal of faith and confidence, again, that the justice system in this country can, in fact, successfully try and convict terrorists. We have a strong track record of doing so. Hundreds of terrorists have been successfully tried and convicted. There's no reason that Guantanamo detainees should be treated any differently.
And J.D. Gordon, President Obama signed on the last day of the year last year the National Defense Authorization Act. How is that going to impact the potential release of men in Guantanamo who have been cleared already by the FBI, the CIA, and other agencies?
Well, I just think he's taken the right step to formalize holding detainees, enemy combatants, without giving them a trial to protect our country, because sometimes you won't be able to get a conviction against a detainee, whether it's in a civilian court or in a military commission.
But they've been cleared by the FBI, the CIA, and others.
Right, but if there's a risk that the executive branch feels that a detainee could pose to the government, it's a wise decision to not let them go. And also, I'd just like to point out some of the fictitious things that Rini said about detainee treatment at Guantanamo. I just don't understand where she's getting her information. I've been to Guantanamo over 30 times over a course of 4 years, bringing over 500 journalists there, so I know quite a bit about the place. I know quite a bit about the documentation about detainee treatment, and less than 1% of the detainees were ever even abused there. None were tortured. Waterboarding was never even conducted there, despite what so many in the left have said in the past.
And Glenn Salmacy, just a few seconds left before we take a break, but what would you add to what J.D. said about that Defense Authorization Act that was signed by the president?
Well, I put a piece in the San Francisco Chronicle just a couple of weeks, I guess a month or so back, about this. My concern with it is that I know what J.D. is saying, but what it did was enshrine this legal ambiguity that we're speaking of. What it did was memorialize and put into statute that we have two options still, to either use the civilian courts or use the military courts. And I think that's problematic to have a bifurcated approach. It should be one system of justice best suited to detain, interrogate, and try alleged al-Qaeda fighters.
All right. Guantanamo Bay turns 10 today, and that is our topic for the rest of this hour. And if you'd like to join us here on Forum, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org, or you can go to Forum's Facebook page as well. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny, and we have a lot more to talk about in the coming hour, so I hope you stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and this hour we are talking about this, the 10th anniversary of Guantanamo Bay Prison, opened in Cuba by President Bush, and remaining open despite promises by President Obama to close it. This hour, our guests include J.D. Gordon. He is a former Defense Department spokesman for the Western Hemisphere in the Office of the Secretary of Defense under both Secretary Rumsfeld and Robert Gates as well. Also, advised presidential candidate Herman Cain on foreign policy. Also with us, Captain Glenn Solmacy. He's chairman of the Department of Humanities and a professor of law with the U.S. Coast Guard Academy. He's author of The National Security Court System, A Natural Evolution of Justice in an Age of Terror. And with me here in the studio, Rini Chakraborty, West Coast Regional Director of Amnesty International. If you want to join us with a question or comment this morning, it's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, and email, as always, forum@kqed.org. We do have an email from Matt, who writes, saying released detainees have gone back to terrorism is meaningless. If I had spent 3 years at Gitmo for nothing, I might be motivated to become a terrorist as well. J.D. Gordon, what do you think about that? The notion that we are, in some sense, as some say, creating terrorists by holding them under the circumstances that we have for the past 10 years.
You know, I think that, like I said, the left hasn't done us any favors in this country by repeating fictitious allegations that we tortured people down there. I think that's what's helped create suicide bombers and people wanting to join Al-Qaeda because of the way it was portrayed falsely, which is really horrific when you think about it.
But again, it's not just the left. I mean, I keep coming back to John McCain because he made a point of it during the 2008 presidential campaign. He, of course, has some credibility on this. He was a former prisoner of war.
Right. Yeah, certainly he does. But he didn't go around saying that there was waterboarding at Guantanamo and that we tortured people. He was for Guantanamo's closure, as was President Bush by the end of the administration. But to just say that we've systematically tortured people around the world is just fictitious, and it does us no good throughout the world. It actually helps create suicide bombers.
Rini?
Yeah, that's simply not true. I mean, you have national security experts and military experts from General Petraeus to Colin Powell who have all said that Guantanamo has become such a symbol of essentially an embarrassment for this country that it needs to be shut down. And this gets really to the question of how Guantanamo, Bagram, and other facilities have really become a security risk in many ways for the men and women who are fighting for this country and also for Americans around the world. I was struck by the statements recently by Sarah Short and others who are known as kind of the American hikers who were detained unlawfully in Iran, how when they were subjected to abuse by the Iranian government, the justification that was given is that, look, your own government is abusing people in Guantanamo. So we have to be very conscious of the fact that it's not just national security experts and military experts who've all said that really we should close down Guantanamo, but by keeping it open, we're really risking the lives of Americans.
We want to bring our listeners in. Let us know what you think about this. What should happened to the 171 men who are there still at Guantanamo, and how disappointed are you with Barack Obama that he seems to have, if not abandoned, certainly put on the back burner his promise to close Guantanamo Bay? 866-733-6786. Let's go to Mountain View, and TJ is on the line. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Quick comment and a question. I'll go with the comment first, simply that when I hear that the FBI, CIA has cleared individuals of whatever alleged wrongdoing or thoughts they might have committed, that they should still be held because they potentially pose in the future a threat to the U.S. government. You know, I just feel like that's commie talk. That's the way North Korea operates. Put someone away because we think they might do something. Here, you get a trial after you've done something. Commit an act, that's real. But my question is this, and I apologize if I missed it in the course of this program. If we're in a state of war, and these people are prisoners of war, why are we talking about trials? I don't recall anyone in World War II getting a trial being in a prisoner of war camp. And if we're not in a state of war, then it seems like we should be having civilian trials and all that.
Captain Solmacy, let me put that to you.
That's a great question, TJ. Thank you. What we have is a new kind of a war, and that's why when you look at this, the unique dynamic we have with this being an armed conflict of some sort, that they're not entitled to POW status. Remember, the POW status, you're right, there is no access to federal courts, there's no trial, there's no habeas hearing. In this situation, what we've done with the Boumediene case is allow now habeas petitions to be filed before our district court in the District of Washington, D.C., and now what are essentially illegal enemy combatants, which they've been called, or illegal belligerents are having access to our courts to hear their case. And again, it gets this conflict. Is this an armed conflict, or is it a is it actually a law enforcement operation? And I would argue, TJ, if we look, that's what we haven't done. We haven't evolved to recognize it's really a mixture. What we have is really a hybrid fighter, a mixture of an international criminal and a warrior of some sort, involved in this conflict we're in with Al-Qaeda, not like any other armed conflict or war we've ever fought, but it is an armed conflict of some sort, a 21st century one, a hybrid, a mixture. We're using law enforcement, CIA, FBI more than ever before in this conflict. So if you have a hybrid fighter in a hybrid war, it seems that Congress should be helping the president. The Senate and the House should be looking at creating a hybrid court system, a mixture of both the military commissions and the civilian courts, Article III federal courts, to best handle the detainees now and in the future.
All right, TJ, thanks very much for the call. What about his other point, Captain Salmasi, that that these men who have been cleared by the FBI and the CIA, not that they're necessarily reformed, but right, that they're not a threat?
I think some of it, Scott, we're dealing with is the inability to find places that will take them. The repatriation process has been very difficult, where we thought, I think, diplomatically there would be much greater appreciation for taking these people. That's really some of it is nuts and bolts, not getting countries to take them. As you know, we've given $1 million, I believe, to Palau to take several of the Uyghur, which were the Chinese dissidents, revolutionaries who were fighting alongside Al-Qaeda. We've repatriated them to other countries. But we also have some of the folks that are there now at Guantanamo, the detainees, haven't been cleared by the FBI and CIA. And this is that small number, which is probably around 30 of the 171 that are there, that are a threat, and they are, as J.D. alluded to, very dangerous. And they haven't been cleared. And those are the ones that I think that are being kept permanently at the discretion of the executive branch. And that really raises all sorts of constitutional questions. What's the authority of the executive to do that? Is it a war? Is it not a war? But that's what we're looking at. And what I would offer is we have to find this new system has to have a way to try everybody, because it isn't like a POW, but it isn't like an ordinary criminal either.
J.D. Gordon, would you agree that if we can find a country to take them, that there are no other constraints based on the law that President Obama signed recently to get these guys released?
Yes, I agree 100% with what Glenn said on that. It's very difficult to get countries to take detainees. I remember when the Pentagon, we approached about 90 countries to take the Uyghurs, 90. And so it's very difficult to take them because the Chinese were putting pressure on countries to not take the Uyghurs because they wanted them repatriated to China, where they most likely would have been executed. And also, just to get back to TJ's question really quickly, he should do some research on Nuremberg. And as Glenn alluded to earlier in the program, we've had military commissions since the Revolutionary War. So, yes, we have had trials for people that were taken prisoner during war.
Well, and that brings up another point that another email writer, Felipe, I think, wrote, which is why don't we use the international court to try these men?
Well, we think the International Criminal Court is biased, and frankly, we haven't been a party to it because we don't want U.S. soldiers to be taken or captured and subject to that court because of political reasons. So we haven't signed on to that treaty, so we don't agree with the International Criminal Court.
Captain Salmasi, were you going to jump in there?
I would if I could. J.D. is 100% right. What's interesting is that there are more rights at a military commission for Felipe to look at than there is at the ICC, before the ICC. There is no jury before the ICC. The prosecutor himself can actually initiate charges without any sort of check whatsoever. There's a very much a concern for many folks in the military and members of the military that going before the ICC would not be as arguably as fair as it would be before a court-martial or any military commission. I think over time, though, I think Felipe's question is right on, is that we have to be looking, as I say, we've changed the military commissions from what they were in World War II to what they were in the Military Commissions Act of 2006, and they changed again in 2009. I'm calling for the creation, and many others are on both sides of the aisle, left and right, for creation of a national security court for this type of fighter to have a trial, but have it a trial that's conscious of the national security implications.
And what would that take to create that?
Sure, and then evolve eventually perhaps to the ICC, but we haven't even been able to categorize in international law what the term terrorism is, so we're not even there yet. You're asking about the National Security Court?
Yeah, what would it take to create that?
I think legislation, obviously, from the Congress. There was some interest in this from both Rahm Emanuel as well as Senator Graham. Governor Ridge has endorsed the idea. The idea would be is to have a court that has specialized judges like we do in bankruptcy, in tax, in immigration. This is a niche area of the law that you really need expertise and have judges that are experts in national security law, intelligence law, international law, law of armed conflict, and have judges set to three-judge panels that would hear these cases but would ensure that every one of these detainees has a trial.
Rini Chakraborty, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I think really what we're finding with Guantanamo and the quagmire that we're in as a government is that we keep finding ourselves digging ourselves deeper and deeper and deeper into a hole we can't get out of. And instead of looking at, you know, enshrining indefinite detention, instead of looking at creating a separate and unequal system of justice and continuing the long line of really human rights abuses and violations that started 10 years ago, what we really should be doing as a government is looking back to and going back to and respecting the rule of law. That's what's going to get us out of this mess.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Kathleen in Martinez, you're on Forum. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I don't believe you have to torture people for those people to really be very upset with what's happening with them and be upset with America for what they're doing to them. I think if with the young man, the Marine, who's in Iran right now, I don't believe any of your panelists would agree with retaining him if Iran decided to retain him indefinitely and not charge him with anything and just keep him and threaten him and possibly even execute him. I don't believe that people would be interested in that. I also do not fault President Obama. And on day one, he eliminated torture. Subsequent to that, he has been trying very hard to close Guantanamo. There have been all kinds of barriers placed in his way in order to be able to do that. And I think that this last woman who just spoke has really echoes what I am concerned about, the enshrining of indefinite detention. I would not want any one of my loved ones to be detained indefinitely, especially people who haven't been charged or especially people who have been determined not to be a threat to this country. I do think we need to get back to the respective rule of law. Otherwise, we are just going to continue down this terrible, terrible path, and people's lives are terribly affected. And I think that that makes for more people who are against America, including people within the country who get very distressed with this situation.
All right, Kathleen, thanks so much for your comments. Glenn Solmacy, where does this end? I mean, how long do we hold on to these, particularly the ones who, as we've said earlier, have been cleared, who are not a threat? How long do we hold them?
I think it's intolerable that they're still there now, especially those that have been cleared. As you know, I think we should close Guantanamo Bay. I don't know how long it will be. I do think that Kathleen was correct and that it's not President Obama. He certainly has tried. President Bush did try. Secretary Gates tried. Secretary Rice tried. Attorney General Holder wants it closed. It's really we have this the messiness of our constitutional system playing before our eyes, where the commander-in-chief wants to close a base and is unable to do so because of legislation from the Congress.
That he signed.
Correct. Well, he just did now, yes. He just did. But the thrust since he's come into office, he's been dealing with this sort of an effort. And as you know, that's one part of a major bill. And if he didn't sign that bill, he would wind up having all sorts of issues with the military in general. He wouldn't be able to feed the troops, essentially, or arm the troops. So it's really a not-in-my-backyard syndrome. If we are going to close Guantanamo, they have to go somewhere. As we know, many of them, as J.D. said, 90 countries were approached by for the Uyghurs. I mean, it's a difficult prospect, but we really need, I think, a bipartisan joint approach from both from the Congress and the executive branch, a commission to look at what to do. Because otherwise, I would predict, and unfortunately, I think all of our panelists and you, Scott, we've been having these. I've probably been in 100 debates on this topic over the last 10 years. I fear that 10 years from now, we're going to still have the same debates going on.
J.D. Gordon, have we asked Cuba?
Cuba,
I guess we don't talk to Cuba.
No. We
can't we just shout over the fence?
Raul Castro had said that if any of the detainees got out of
the base at Guantanamo, they would return them to us. And so the Cubans were well aware of what we were doing down there. I think one point I'd like to make is President Obama at this point, he's really been one of the critics in chief of Guantanamo, now our commander in chief. I think he really should thank the troops at this point, thank the troops and thank our intelligence agencies for the work they've done down there. We've had thousands of troops keeping al-Qaeda and Taliban militants at bay, keeping them off the streets, preventing a second 9/11. And I got to tell you, some of the intelligence we got from detainees prevented a second 9/11. There were plots against the Library Tower in Los Angeles to crash planes into it. There were plots to hijack planes to the Canary Wharf and Heathrow Airport. And it was the interrogations that have happened through our intelligence agencies that prevented those type attacks. So I think at this point, President Obama should just recognize what Guantanamo has added to protect the country and thank the troops.
All right. Now, he's thanked the troops many times for many things, if not that. Let's go to the phones now. Phil in Burlingame, welcome.
Hi. You know, it's interesting. Everybody just accepts Guantanamo. But, you know, I grew up in Miami, and it's part of the island of Cuba, which can't stand this country.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, Cuba.
I mean, if you talk to people who've
yeah.
gone to Cuba, they actually like Americans.
Cubans. I mean, the government of Cuba and the United States clearly have open hostilities towards one another. And ask Hugo Chavez, and yet our ships are coming in and out. You know, we're landing helicopters. There's international waters issues. You know, I'd like to know from the panelists, you know, what is the legal territorial status of Guantanamo, and by what legal authority does the United States, you know, still have a beachhead in Cuba?
Yeah, Glenn Salmacy, can you give us a quick history there?
Sure. It was turn of the century, the last century, 1900, is turned over to us as a lease. We actually have the property for a life tenured lease. We, as your caller alludes to, I mean, for me, prior to all this, don't forget one of the reasons why people say, why Guantanamo? One, they were looking for a place to house these folks right after the war was initiated in Afghanistan. We had to find a location to put detainees when captured. And the structure itself was in place in Guantanamo Bay, the naval station base, for over 100 years. But in 1994, during the Haitian migration, there had been some facilities, detention facilities, just for people to be interviewed. There was a very rough skeleton in place already. And that was one of the reasons why they did use that base. The flip also is that it has been a naval base and a training ground for Coast Guard and Navy vessels since the turn of the 20th century, since the beginning of the 20th century. And, you know, I had trained there, and it's very, very hard for me, especially talking to Amnesty today, because, and I put in my book, when I was training in the 80s as a young officer at Guantanamo Bay, the American flag stood beautifully flying in a sea of tyranny around you with Castro's Cuba right there. And you look at the American flag and the beauty, it's a beautiful place to horseback ride, and to scuba is beautiful there. And I remember fond memories of Cuba. And then to hear in 2005 Amnesty call it the gulag of our time, I found that to be a little bit hyperbolic.
Yeah. Phil, thanks for the call. Here's another email from Kurt. Captain Salmacy also speaks to this. He writes, I've always been confused by the treatment of Cuban refugees. The Gitmo military base is sovereign U.S. soil, is it not? According to the Cuban Adjustment Act of 1966, any Cuban who sets foot on U.S. soil is automatically granted asylum. Why don't we see Cuban refugees fleeing to Gitmo, which is far shorter a boat ride or raft ride than Key West?
The United States Marine Corps?
They would turn them away.
Correct.
All right. Back to the phones. Mark is on the line in San Jose. I guess the last thing they want is more people entering Gitmo at this point. Mark in San Jose, welcome.
Thanks a lot. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Hey, listen, I'm one of the members of the left, if you will, that Mr. Gordon refers to, and I'm actually an attorney who champions civil rights, and yet at the same time, I'm very conflicted. I certainly join in the sentiment of Kathy from Martinez, who called in earlier. I'm very concerned about 10 years, but I'm also very intrigued by what the captain is saying and the fact that there's intelligence out there that we probably don't even know, and I'm certainly very concerned about the security of our country. So here I am trying to struggle with this and trying to figure this out, as I think many of your listeners are.
Yeah.
But when Mr. Gordon speaks, he simply politicizes this, and he says things that are blatantly false that just get in the way of trying to figure this out. I'll just point out a couple very quickly. To say that the world believed there were weapons of mass destruction, does he not remember Hans Martin Blix, who's screaming at the top of his lungs saying, we're not finding anything, give us more time. That's number one. How about when the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Powell, does what New Yorkers, not me, not people outside, New Yorkers, called a dog and pony show in front of the UN when he's trying to justify this thing. So, and I'm a big fan of Colin Powell, but that was a very dark moment for him. And then to tell everybody recently, 5 minutes ago, that the president should thank the troops? Are you kidding me? Look, is this Glenn Beck? Who are we talking to here? I very much appreciate what the captain is saying. I'm very intrigued in his proposal. I'm struggling with this. Let's keep the politics and the Glenn Beckisms out.
All right, Mark. Go ahead. Yeah, last thought, real quick.
No, that's it.
Okay, thanks. Thanks very much for the call. Well, and speaking of politics, Troy writes, how might the 2012 campaign affect the future of Gitmo? J.D. Gordon, you were advising Herman Cain until he suspended his campaign. What do you expect to emerge from this campaign? It hasn't really been a front burner issue.
Well, I think Guantanamo is going to stay status quo for the rest of the this term, the president's term. I think he's tried to move to the political center when it comes to security. You know, we've seen some success. He's been able to take out Bin Laden and Anwar al-Awlaki via our troops, and so I think that's good. And I don't think he's going to touch Guantanamo because he really can't. The Congress has tied his hands, fortunately. And so I think we'll see Guantanamo remain status quo. We'll see what happens with the next election, though. I'm a little nervous with this administration, though, in that they're negotiating with the Taliban, and they've been looking at releasing the former Taliban army commander, the former Taliban interior minister, and a former Taliban governor to open this political office in Qatar. So this administration still has me quite nervous. And as far as the last caller goes, name calling is one thing, but I think it's good to get your facts straight. Most people don't know really what the facts are at Guantanamo. Most people have never been there. So I have been, and I can tell you it's kept our country quite safe. In fact,
but facts can be interpreted in different ways by different people.
Yeah, and with reference to the troops, I've got a column on Fox's Opinion today about Guantanamo and the 10-year anniversary. So I hope your listeners can take a look at that.
I want to go back to the calls, but Rini, did you want to jump in real quick?
Yeah, just to respond to the caller's question, the reality is the elections have clearly politicized and over-politicized this issue. A couple of years ago, the president coming into office promised to close Guantanamo. Since that time, you have scores and scores of people from the military, national security experts, and others reach a consensus that, yes, in fact, Guantanamo needs to be closed. But the fact remains that it's still open, in spite of the fact that the experts are saying that it's actually more of a security risk and doing more harm to Americans.
All right, let's go back to the phones. David in San Francisco, welcome.
That last comment is exactly where I want to go. As an American, I kind of feel, I'm putting aside the whole question of whether these folks should be tried or not. It sort of feels like it's a good detention place. They're on an island far, far away. So what's wrong with it, or it seems to what's right with it, about as a detention center? It seems like it works pretty well.
Glenn Salmacy?
I think it has, as J.D. alluded to, and again, I think just to applaud him, he did bring an enormous amount of people from all sides of the spectrum to the island to give them an opportunity to see for themselves so they could determine the facts during his tenure at the Pentagon. And I think one of the items is, I think we can't say it's working well. Yes, it's working well with protecting us, but in terms of affording justice and for the international community to see us doing what we're normally doing, upholding the rule of law and promoting human rights, if we've only had 6 trials out of 770 there, 10 years later, 6 trials, that perception is tainting our foreign policy in other areas unnecessarily. And there's ways to get around that, whether it's because Congress isn't allowing us, the president wants to, the Secretary of Defense wants to, but Congress won't let us. It would be wonderful, wouldn't it, on a day like today when there are protests going on and great columns in Fox News and the different perspectives, that there is a call for a commission to look at this once and for all. Haven't had a commission from the Congress and from the executive branch, and with some of these experts that Rini's speaking of and J.D. speak of, to go and analyze this and report out in 6 months and put this to rest once and for all so we can move on.
Yeah. Well, of course, we've seen commissions before on the debt, for example. They just sort of come out with a great report that sits on the shelf and collects a lot of dust.
I would hope that wouldn't be in this case. One of the things we're talking about is it's interesting that the debt and these other items are political issues, and certainly it's going to be a political issue. We know that, but it doesn't necessarily have to be partisan.
All right. Let me just get a couple of web comments in. One writes, I'm not necessarily opposed to putting some terrorists on trial in U.S. courts, but let's be honest, it isn't only Republicans who are preventing this from happening. The New York congressional delegation, which is composed mostly of Democrats, went ballistic on Obama's Justice Department when it proposed putting a key al-Qaeda operative on trial in New York City. And then Jody writes, and this might be a good way to wrap up, and we've heard a couple of writers express some frustration on the he said, she said sort of nature of this discussion. But Jody writes, so what are the references, the reports, the investigations that have been conducted, and how can we, the public, get access to them so we can make an informed judgment on who is correct? General, or I've just given you a promotion. Captain Salmasi, what about you?
Thank you. If you want to call me General Hayden, I think General Hayden might get a little upset to hear you doing the. There's obviously opportunities. There's great reports out from the State Department, from the Defense Department. On the Defense Department website, there's whole areas on military commissions. Human Rights First has a great report by a friend of mine, Jim Benjamin, who disagrees with me and thinks civilian courts are the right place. That's a great report on the prosecutions that have taken place, terrorism suspects. There are some good books out there on what's taken place. Kira Rotunda has a great book on Guantanamo Bay. There's a couple of different outlets. I would just say to just do your research, and Amnesty will offer some great reports as well to look at and for you to make the informed decision. Just look at all sides before you make any decision.
Very good. Good way to end this discussion. Thanks to all of our guests this hour. Captain Glenn Salmasi, author of The National Security Court System, A Natural Evolution of Justice in an Age of Terror. Thanks to you. Thanks also to J.D. Gordon and Rini Chakraborty from Amnesty International. Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Amy Machado. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. And our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer, sitting in today for Michael Krasny. Thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Ferro, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.